It's time to get down to business with $30 a month business internet. WOW Business offers 99.9% network reliability so that you can keep your business moving. $30 a month gets you 30 megabytes per second with 24/7 US-based support, a price lock guarantee, and a 60-day satisfaction guarantee. Lock in our lowest priced offer for the support you need. Go to switchtowellbusiness.com. Offer for new customers with a 2-year agreement subject to change. Prices do not include taxes, fees, and equipment charges. Restrictions apply.
All right. So this is Jason Miller, author of Welcome to the Funnel, Proven Tactics to Turn Your Social and Content Marketing Up to 11, and you are listening to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
Hello and welcome to this hopefully short-lived series that will be airing in addition to the weekly Marketing Book podcast interviews. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal during this unusual time is to reconnect you with past guests on the Marketing Book podcast, share some ideas and inspiration, and maybe a much-needed laugh or two. I've interviewed over 200 authors on the show, and my plan is to continue this series until I either run out of authors or quarantine, whichever comes first. A word of warning, the host and guest may very likely be drinking cocktails during these conversations. I mean, come on. They are recorded during the cocktail hour. To find the show notes for each episode with pictures of each guest and links mentioned in their conversation, visit marketingbookcocktails.com. Marketingbookcocktails.com. See what I did there? And if you'd like to join the conversation, email a voice recording to me at douglas@salesartillery.com, and I'll try to include it in a future episode. I'd love to hear from you. Otherwise, connect with me on LinkedIn where we can chat. Jason Miller, welcome to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Thank you for having me, and it's great to chat with you.
And you and the family, you're all doing okay there? You're in London, right?
That is correct. We are in London. My wife is she's upstairs with the two kids. I got a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old. So homeschooling's a bit of a challenge, but we're making do. We have a park across the street from us, and London has been having some fabulous weather lately. So we're making the most of it.
Oh, good, good. So, Jason, we're up to about episode 280 or so on the Marketing Book podcast, and you were an early supporter. You were episode 28.
Wow.
Published back.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Well, there's nothing else to do. I just keep producing these podcasts every week. But that was back in July of 2015. And I remember before then, I was serving on a panel discussion in Washington, D.C., and it was about social media. And I mentioned your book. It had come out recently, and I was explaining something. I can't remember what it was. And somebody in the audience held up your book. In other words, they had your book in the audience. And then they started tweeting to you saying, hey, this guy's talking about your book. And he had just seen you speak somewhere and got a copy of your book. So that was funny. And then from there, I was able to, I guess I got your attention. And then I was able to get you on the Marketing Book podcast. But for folks that haven't listened to episode 28, remind folks of who you are and what you've been doing.
Of course. And that's really interesting, because I don't think I have any family in Washington, but
no, okay. It was somebody who had been attending. It was somebody. Just, oh, yes.
I know. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, it was your mom. Yeah.
No, so again, thanks. Congrats on the run, by the way. And I want to say, we have a lot of the same friends, and run a lot of the same circles with marketing friends. But how well respected you are, and the niche you have here, and how many people that you've had on the podcast. So congrats on just a hell of a run there, and it's continuing to go. I love this series, so thank you for that. First off, but yeah, my name is Jason Miller. We met, I think, when I was at I think it was at LinkedIn, right?
We met at, I'd interviewed you, but then I later met you in person. The first time was at the Marketing Profs B2B Forum in Boston. And again, this is sort of the Jason Miller trivia. There's a lot of my mental hard drive space that you're taking up, and it's in a good way, because all the stuff I've learned about you and this particular your book and all the things you phenomenal amount of content you've produced over the years. But I remember talking to you And you were in London at that point. This was 2016. So it was the fall of 2016. Yeah. And I had heard about this thing called Brexit in the UK. And I knew you had just flown in from there. And I said, you know, I didn't know much about it. And it really seemed to have surprised a lot of people. And so I happened to mention it. And, you know, we talked a bit about that. And it was before the presidential election. And I remember you were just saying, "Oh, the Brexit thing really surprised everyone," and then you said, "And I, you won't remember this, and I don't even know what your politics are, and we're not going to talk about anybody's politics." But you said, "Yeah, you know, it was really surprising, and I think Trump's going to win this presidential election." And you were the first person I had ever heard who was, I guess, I mean, we all just kind of assumed that, you know, this was, nothing was going to happen. And you said, "No, I think there's something going on there." And I can't remember the exact conversation. And then he won, as everyone knows. And I just remember thinking, Jason Miller, what was he thinking? How did he know? What insight did he have into these electorates at, maybe from what you saw in England, but also your familiarity with American voters?
Well, I had just moved to London, and we were at Cannes Lion, me and the team, the LinkedIn team, were at Cannes Lion. I remember it was the last night, it was a Thursday night. I didn't even really understand what Brexit was. I just moved here a couple of weeks before this happened. We're sitting there having this big dinner, celebrating an amazing Cannes Lion in the south of France, and everyone's drinking wine, and they're saying, "There's no way Brexit's going to happen." And we wake up in the morning, and of course, everyone was just devastated because they you know, it won by like one percentage point, right? Mm. And it just changed everything. Now we're out of the EU, and what's like all this uncertainty, and you know the pound took a hit, so my salary in 2 weeks took a hit, and I remember I was wearing my Hotel California T-shirt that I got from Cabo, a little town outside of Cabo San Lucas, where Hotel California is, and I remember walking to get a taxi back to the airport, and this woman walks up to me, and she says, "Hotel California, just like the EU, you can check out, but you can never leave." And I'm like, "Oh, like too soon, too soon." But then the same week was Microsoft acquired LinkedIn, and you know, like a month later or whatever, Donald Trump got elected. But I'll tell you, the only reason I said that is because what happened with Brexit. Again, I'm no expert in politics here, just from observing, when you tell people not to do something and then you make them feel dumb for doing so, they're probably going to do that. I'm not saying out of spite, but it seems like as soon as you tell someone not to do it and then make them feel bad for wanting to do that or even exploring that idea, they tend to turn on you very quickly. And I think, you know, who knows? I was laying in bed because the election results were coming in. And we went to bed with Hillary in a huge lead, and I woke up, I had a 6 a.m. flight to Dublin, and Trump won, and we were astonished. And then, you know, every time I get in the cab anywhere and they hear my accent or lack thereof, it's always the same thing. It's here comes the Trump bashing. I'm like, I wasn't even there. I had nothing to do with it. So.
Oh, they all – everyone – because you're an American, everyone asks you about Trump.
Yeah, except funny enough, I was in Tel Aviv. I was in Tel Aviv, and the taxi driver, lovely gentleman, says, "Oh, you're American." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Where are you from?" I said, "I'm from San Francisco." And he said, "Oh," and I thought, here it comes, where he just lays into Trump. He
goes, "What the hell's the matter with you people?"
But no, he said, "I love Donald Trump. I think he's the greatest." And it was the first time I'd ever met anyone in all my travels who celebrated Donald Trump in Europe or, you know, in Israel, Middle East. So it was an interesting conversation.
That's interesting. I remember in the early 80s, I lived in Germany for 3 years, and I was in the army there. And so this was after Ronald Reagan had been elected. And again, I wasn't that really much into politics, but I remember once I got to Europe, I got so many questions about Reagan. And the one that I kept getting was, how can you people elect an actor to become a president? And I just, that really surprised me. And that was the question I got all the time. Like, as if, well, of course, in America, people reinvent themselves more easily maybe than other places and go from one career to the next. Look at Jason Miller. But it's as if he stopped being an actor on a Friday afternoon, and then he became president of the United States on Monday. That was sort of the reaction that I got from everybody. But it was sort of like, why am I being asked Why am I being asked these questions?
Oh, that's funny.
I know kind of what you're talking about. It had not occurred to me.
It's interesting, you know, and the other, it's just interesting to see the different points of view, of course, all around the world. But Brexit, man, has just been, I mean, just nonstop. It's been, I don't think anyone still knows what's really going to happen, even though we're leaving. We're certainly leaving the EU. I mean, I'm not a citizen. My wife has dual citizenship. She's Irish and American.
Oh.
But I think we're fine. Irish and UK have had such a free movement of people for so long and such a great relationship, they say it's not going to affect. So we should be fine. I'm not planning on coming home anytime soon.
But, you know, let me go back to the question I asked earlier, because Jason Miller's one of those guys not comfortable talking about himself, but I want to mention this. Are you from, you said San Francisco, but are you from St. Louis originally or Missouri?
Born and raised in St. Louis, Louis, Missouri, yeah.
And so you have a rock and roll background. I mean, you were a bass player, a musician in a metal band at one point?
I played in a hair metal band when I was 17 years old. We were called Silent Cry. We had leather jackets with airbrush logos. I had hair down to my butt. And, zebra stripe spandex, the whole, we had makeup and everything. And that all came crashing down. The one day we were watching MTV and the VJ, Ricky Rackman at the time, said, "Hey, I got a new band for you. I think you're really going to like them. They're called Nirvana."
And we were like, "You didn't plaid."
That was it. That was it, man. Like in one fell swoop, the entire hair metal genre of Poison, Warrant, all these bands got wiped out, and the invasion of grunge happened. And it was after that point where I was like, maybe I need to figure out how to get into college and do something different with my life. So yeah,
my next move. Ultimately, you ended up for I guess over 10 years with Sony Music, right?
That was the thing. So I figured if I couldn't be in a band, that I would work for a music label. I'm just obsessed with music, as you well know, and I wanted to live vicariously through the artist. So I was 21, 22 years old, and I was an intern at Sony while I was still in college. A college rep had like 3 or 4 jobs, like everyone else. And by the way, I'm still paying off my college loan.
Oh, really?
I realized that the other day. It was an amazing time because it was 99, 2000, and I was in charge of these baby bands. Like, they would give us these baby bands, these brand new bands, and we would try to take them to radio stations and retail stores and try to promote them and get them to the next level. And I was hanging out with Korn and Incubus and System of a Down and all these bands that before they were anybody. And for a metal kid in his early 20s, it was a dream come true. We went, a couple dates out with Slayer. Kerry King, the guitar player from Slayer, saved me from getting my ass kicked outside of his tour bus one night just for some random jackass, giving some bully outside. So crazy stories, lots of fun. I was there for 10 years and I watched this industry completely fight digital instead of embracing it. And I think what happens when you try to fight, digital or fight disruption. You end up on the losing end. And I think that we, see the music. I watched the music industry completely crumble down to where Quincy Jones finally came out and said, quote, "Honey, there is no more music industry." And so, I had to, I think it was in 2009. The last record I was a part of was, I remember the Adele record. The Adele record. And we couldn't give that thing away. We had advanced copies of that taken around to try to get some buzz. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. I mean, she's one of the greatest voices of our lifetime. But that record was a tough sell in the beginning. And then the death of Michael Jackson. I remember I was in Amoeba Records when that happened. And everyone wanted physical product. It was the last surge of people buying something physical because they wanted something to hold on to remember Michael by. And I make a long story short, I quit there.
You kept getting disrupted, Jason. I think there's a trend here.
I started a music blog just to keep my connection, and that turned into, Rock and Roll Cocktail and the whole photography thing, which is another story. But then I went back to school and tried to figure out what to do, try to get my master's degree. That was taking too long, so I took a bunch of accelerated courses in digital marketing research, PPC, SEM, everything at UC Berkeley, and had to kind of reinvent myself at the young age of 34, I think it was. 32, 34, Jesus, I don't remember. And then I went to Marketo for a couple years and got a PhD in all things marketing automation from John Miller and Maria Pergolino, two of the smartest marketers I've ever met in my entire life. And then got in early at LinkedIn when LinkedIn Marketing Solutions first started. And I think it was like seven or eight people on the marketing on the marketing solutions team, and nobody even knew what marketing solutions was. And the day I started, my birthday, it was July 15th, and we launched sponsored content in the feed. It was the first paid offering from LinkedIn in the feed the first week I started.
Wow!
And it's been an interesting ride.
And so, you were at LinkedIn when Microsoft purchased it, right?
Yeah, so 3 years in San Francisco, then 2.5 years over here in London, and got acquired right the same that's the same week that Brexit happened, like literally the same week.
Boy, you just really cleared the decks there, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a crazy time for me, but I moved over to the UK. I moved over to London because I think about this a lot. If you have global marketer in your title. I found that a lot of times you're not very global in how you think. And so, it could be as simple as thinking about time zone differences or, campaigns or, just looking at something and how would that resonate in another country. And so I wanted to get firsthand experience. So I wanted to see what it was like to be a true global marketer. And I feel like I'm a much better marketer because of that. But, having experience on both sides of the pond is, I think, the most incredible experience anybody could have to really get empathy for what it's like not for working for a U.S.-based company in across the ocean. It's a remarkable experience.
Well, and your wife is from Ireland, so I mean that made you kind of international right off the bat.
Well, she's born in New York, born in Long Island, but she has dual citizenship.
So, okay. I'm sorry. Yeah. Well, that's great. And the I think I first learned about you, of course, when I was reading so much of Marketo's materials and blog and all that sort of thing. And then we went from there. And some other things that people may not know about you. You mentioned the rock and roll cocktail, which is this. Anyone that follows you on social just wonders how much time you are at home because you post so many photos of all these concerts that you do. And I guess you're doing most of them in London. And we'll include a link to that on this episode's show notes at marketingbookcocktails.com. See how we're converging here?
I love it.
And that's great. And then the other thing that I just wanted to thank you for is when you got to London, you seems like you traveled even more, and you're a phenomenal photographer. And these pictures that you take, I mean, whether you were in Rome or Israel or wherever, it's just, I stop in the feed and look through it. It's really great. And I think, did I see that you've actually been trying out more film lately?
Oh, I'm obsessed with film. I'm like, since the lockdown, I was shooting like a couple concerts a week here in London, and trying to balance that out with my day job and the kids and everything else. But with the lockdown, I was looking for new things to explore, and film's always been part of my repertoire. But yeah, I'm obsessed with film. I'd be honest with you, I keep buying film cameras. I just got a Sputnik stereoscopic camera from Russia that was 50 years old, and
wow.
Been shooting. I got a huge medium format now from the 80s, and a Nikon from the 50s. And anyway, but yeah, I shoot the film. I've been shooting around in the park here where they're, they allow us for our 1 hour out to go for exercise and whatnot, shoot the kids and do portraits of my daughter. But yeah, and then I learned how to develop the film myself in the kitchen. So I do it all in house.
Cool. Well, I think, this quarantine is pushing a lot of people out of their comfort zones, but it's also pushing them into new areas. Even this knuckleheaded podcaster, he's starting to do this daily series, which won't last forever. But, start trying some other crazy things. And the only other thing I got to mention about Jason Miller is you are, if I am ever playing Seinfeld trivia, I need you on my team. Is that right?
Every day when I got home from work or school, I would watch Seinfeld just to decompress. So two episodes a day for probably 6-7 years. It's that way. You know, you can put it on the background. You get some work done. Check some email. It's always on. It's like it's funny. It's lighthearted, and I think Jerry is the he's the best comedian of all time. He's my Steve Martin, right? So my I remember growing up on Steve Martin. My father loves Steve Martin. He's my timeless classic, right? Doesn't have to go down the controversial road or put a bunch of, you know, he doesn't have to curse to make his points. He's just funny. And
yes.
I find that absolutely remarkable and so incredibly, you know, unique, I would say.
And if anyone hasn't seen it yet, he's got a new special on Netflix. And, you know, he just doesn't disappoint. And he even makes it, you know, I think he's almost a billionaire now. And he joked at the beginning. He said, look, I don't have to be here. But he was saying that because, have you seen it?
It's on my watch list.
He says to the audience, he was like, because the joke wasn't about him, but he was saying about how, you know, everything's inconvenient these days. He goes, even you people, it was a pain in the butt to get here. You had to find a babysitter. You had to get a ride. Yeah. He goes, and I, you know, and I wasn't sure I wanted to come either. But he just loves what he's doing, and he's so good at it. Yeah. Steve Martin comes to mind too.
I absolutely love Jerry and everything he does. So I think he's timeless.
So this whole quarantine, I guess I should ask Jason Miller. You obviously saw it coming because you saw all these things coming, like Brexit and Trump. But what happened with you? Did you suddenly have to stop traveling around, or I mean, what have you been noticing?
So I left Microsoft. I was looking to take some time off, and I got a couple of books I got to finish up, and so I was looking to take some time off. I had a bunch of speaking gigs that literally got canceled or moved to online. I got one next week. SMX London had to move to online. So, but you know, I, the biggest thing for me is I'm missing the music. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I think I got in the last show in London. It had to be the last show. It was Morrissey at Wembley Arena, and I was photographing the show. And
Oh yes, I saw those. I'm a big Morrissey fan.
He was brilliant. I don't agree with the man's political views or any views, but he's.
I don't even know what they are. I just listen to the music.
He says some really dumb things.
Oh,
but,
really?
Okay. But he is majestic. He is a brilliant singer songwriter, and I love him. Anyway, so I had to shoot him, but. It was the last show of the Morrissey tour, and there was a lot of controversy because, you know, it was probably the one of the last kind of mass gatherings, I guess, if you will, that we had before Boris shut down the country, and it's just been. I mean, the biggest thing for me has been, you know, home. My wife is great. She's been homeschooling Penny, and I watched a little Jack while she's doing that, and she's working full time. She's a senior director in tech marketing as well, so she's quite busy. But I'm sort of looking for my next role, but not in a rush. I want to find the right one, and enjoying, you know, photography, enjoying the kids. But I do miss the music, and that's the biggest thing. But you know, we're lucky. We live in South London, right on the River Thames, right. Right across the street from Battersea Park. So at least we have the park. They haven't closed the parks yet. Actually, they just lifted the ban. We're starting to lift restrictions starting a couple of days ago. Hmm. But some people are going back to work. I think stores are going to start opening next week. But I mean, the biggest thing for me has just been trying to keep the kids entertained and trying to support my wife and, you know, try to learn as much as I can about photography and figure out, you know, what the hell I want to do next.
Figure out this film, you know, because you're kicking it old school, yo.
I will tell you this, though. There's something, there's really respect, you know, taking a snapshot with your phone. So much more. If you get one of these cameras, you hold it, you compose the shot, you take it, you take the film out, and you develop it yourself, and then you hold up the end result. And Jesus, it takes hours, right?
Yeah.
But it is, if you nail a shot, you have a whole new respect, and it will change the way you think about photography. You won't be taking a million shots with your phone anymore. You'll get one. You'll get the right one, and you'll be happy with it.
Yes. It. My late father-in-law, he passed away a few years ago in his 90s, and he was quite the photographer. And he had a Hasselblad.
Oh, yeah.
I only mention that because I know that you would know what it is, and I think we still have it. But he was just a phenomenal photographer, and we, of course, after he passed away, we got access to all these photos he'd taken, and it was really just amazing. And I guess maybe deep down inside, I was worrying it was a lost art. So yeah, that's interesting. It's sort of like for some reason in my head, I just thought of somebody who learns to play golf with a really bad set of clubs, and only later do they appreciate really good clubs. Something like that. So
that Hasselblad, man, that's one of the finest cameras ever produced. That's a medium format, beautiful piece of work. I mean, you're talking anywhere from $10,000 up to $50,000 for one of those cameras, and I have a sort of a Bronica, which is a sort of a poor man's Hasselblad. It's about $600 used, but oh, wow. Man, that's a great story. That's an amazing camera. If you ever get to shoot that thing, that will get you some incredible photos.
Well, I'll just have to give it to you. No, I'm kidding. It's not mine to give away. I think it's the one thing my wife was familiar with. Yeah, we should. Well, it'd be a great thing to explore. So, is there anything that you think is going to have a long-term effect on marketers and content marketing?
It's interesting to me that there's a lot of, everyone's coming up with COVID solutions for marketers and what your brand should say or what they shouldn't say. And I've just been sort of on the sidelines, just kind of reading and watching. But there was a conversation happening on LinkedIn just yesterday I was part of, where I guess they did some research that said you shouldn't turn off your advertising. Just don't, and don't try to be more important to your audience than you actually are. Doug Kessler, Doug.
Yeah.
I was on a lunch thing this afternoon, a virtual lunch thing with Doug earlier today, and he said something really nice about, what did he say? He said, I think it was like PayPal or somebody sent him a message and about this really sentimental message about COVID. And he goes, that doesn't really matter to me. I'm just, you're making yourself more important than you actually are to me. And I think a brand just needs to sit back and figure out where they fit in and don't overdo it. And some people get it right, some people get it wrong. But I, again, Doug said something else that I think is really interesting, that we shouldn't be calling people out or judging them if it's an honest try to do something, compelling and relevant, because we all make mistakes and it should be forgiven because there is no playbook for what happens during something like this. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I think everything's changed, but nothing's changed, right? I think if you look at a lot of the advice that's being given out, it's the same advice I would give out
3 months ago.
In any time, yeah. Slow down. Don't be stupid. Don't be as relevant and helpful as you possibly can, and be there when your customers need you. I think that seems to be the message, and I don't see why that's any different.
Well, that was great advice 3+ months ago. But now I think I'm heartened thinking that more companies understand that. In other words, going forward, I think that, or I hope that more companies are giving some thought to how they're going to be perceived. You know what I mean? Like in the past, they might not have been thinking about, to use a word that Doug Kessler would use, just cranking out crap. Cranking out crap content and talking about themselves and yada, yada, yada. And it's sort of like, it seems like a lot more companies are trying to think about, well, how are we going to be perceived? And the reason I mention that is because there seem to be a lot of companies, or at least conversations I'm hearing, where people are saying, should we even say anything? Should we market? Or another one I hear even more often is, should we even be selling now?
Yeah, I mean, the answer is yes, yes, and yes. I think you should just – I think the only thing you need to do is I was chatting with my wife about this, and she said, why not just look at your messaging and just maybe tweak that a little bit, right? So it's a little bit more sensitive to the nature of what's happening around everyone. So I think I really do think it's business as usual. I think you just need to take a look at what campaigns you're running, what your messaging is, and sort of adapt that to what's happening now without being, the overly sensitive, overcaring, trying to be more important to your customers than you actually should be, right? Are you getting them what they need? Are you supporting them? Doug also mentioned there was a steakhouse, I guess, in his that he goes to quite a bit, and they weren't trying to sell him anything or trying to do trying to push any messaging on him, but they were just sending reports or just reporting on how they're dealing with it, how they're supporting their their staff and what this means to them and when they reopen. So I think if you have something to say, just be smart about how you say it, and don't try to be something you're not. Again, marketing, I would have said to anyone 2 or 3 months ago as well.
Yes, absolutely. And also, something that seems to be overlooked with a lot of companies, or too many companies, is this idea of just communicating with their customers. Now, you may have dealt with larger ones, but there's this impulse for a lot of companies to, focus all their marketing on just getting new business, net new business, and maybe sometimes ignoring the customer experience and, the sales process and all that sort of thing. And it's sort of like, why don't you just reach out to the people that are your customers? Like you just said, with the steakhouse, I mean, why don't you not worry for a brief moment about trying to get new customers, just let people know what's going on with you. And I've even had a couple of authors on this series, authors of sales books, for instance, they're just saying, just call your prospects up and say, look, this isn't even a sales call. I was just wondering, what are you guys up to? What's going on? I don't want to talk a business, but or how are you doing? Things like that. And people are, I'm getting phone calls returned. I don't know about you, Jason, but people seem to have time. Heck, I'm even able to get Jason Miller on the phone here. So,
I don't know. I'm at a loss for words right now.
People say that a lot when I say really stupid things, so I'm used to it. And frankly, you're not the first one today, Jason. But I think it's just a little bit of empathy for what people are going through. But even like for some clients, we had some content that we were traditionally sharing, evergreen stuff that was very helpful. And we just stopped for a while because we were helping to share information about what was going on and how their customers could get help, even if it wasn't from the client. But then we've gone back to sharing some of this other, kind of business as usual stuff. But even then, when it's being shared in social media, we're trying to couch it in maybe a phrase or something saying, acknowledging what's going on, but not being heavy-handed or unhelpful about it. So,
yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, I would go back to another lesson before pre-COVID that still stands true, and it's like, I don't think anyone, that one of the biggest challenges marketers always say is, oh, we need more leads, more leads, more leads. And I've been in that rat race where you get more leads and you fill up this funnel, you fill up the top of the funnel, and then the leads, you have a really poor scoring system or an inadequate nurtured stream, right? And so all these leads go into what I used to call lead purgatory, which is just a place where leads go before they go into the into closed revenue or do they go back into the wild, whatever. But they just get kind of lost. And I think the biggest lesson there is most marketers don't need more leads. They need to get better at qualifying and nurturing and doing more with the leads they have. And my wife does talks about this all the time. And there's always the big question, the big challenge of like, we need more leads. And I don't think that's ever the answer. I think you nailed it there. Like, get back in touch with the customers, your prospects, make sure that they know you're there, make sure that they know you're there to support them, and don't push them. Just be helpful and relevant and focus on doing more with what you have.
That's interesting. There's an author named Jeb Blunt, BLOUNT, and he's written 11 books now about sales primarily. And I've interviewed him a number of times. And one day on an interview, he wrote Fanatical Prospecting and books like that. And he told me that he's one of the leading sales trainers, authors in the world, and he gets more business from marketing people than from CEOs or sales leaders. I couldn't believe that. And he said, well, here's what's going on. This is kind of back to your point about they don't actually need more leads. He said that he's hired by a lot of companies by the marketing people, because the marketing people are doing what they're supposed to be doing and they've got everything, very rather nicely optimized, like what you just talked about in terms of nurturing and qualification and all that. And there's a non-existent or a terrible sales process that then happens with the salespeople. And I think the marketing people were getting tired of being yelled at because the sales weren't closing. So here's a sales leader who's getting hired by marketing people because it wasn't a problem with leads, like you just said.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is you know, the sales and marketing alignment has been the battle's been going on. I can't believe we still haven't solved for this yet. But you know, I think you know, marketing being held accountable for pipeline instead of MQLs, marketing qualified leads, is probably a good start. You know, right before I left LinkedIn, a couple of years ago, excuse me, they had some really interesting things happening with Sales Navigator, where they were actually taking Sales Navigator a marketer could launch a campaign, and then a sales rep could track in Sales Navigator who engages with that in real time. And I thought, man, that is the solution. That's it. Marketing and sales finally coming together in a meaningful way, where, you know, marketing launches this campaign and sales can see who's engaging with it in real time at what stage and reach out to them and contact them or you know, whatever they need to do to help move that lead to a better spot. So that's I guess that's where it's all heading eventually, but yeah,
like, not in our lifetimes.
Probably not, no. But I think the biggest thing is marketing just needs to be held accountable for pipeline instead of just a bunch of leads.
Raw number of leads, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And there was another book on the show. Well, there's been a lot of them, but this one particular one that I really enjoyed was called Aligned to Achieve by Tracy Eiler and Andrea Austin. They're with the Inside View. I don't know if you ever ran into them in San Francisco. Andrea was head of sales, Tracy was head of marketing, and they basically documented the process they did at their company to get marketing and sales better aligned, which all these studies show that you get faster revenue growth and greater profitability. So, Jason, you mentioned you were working some other books. Anything marketing book podcast listeners would be interested in?
Well, I have a couple of things coming out. So, Down in Front did quite well for the concept photography book. So, I have Down in Front 2, which is in the works, and that's another passion project. But I have Alive and Amplified, is this book I've been working on for about 5 years, and it's about I don't want to say personal branding because I think it's a little bit overdone, but it's about, you know, how to stand out and think differently and be a sort of a more creative focused marketer in the world of B2B. And it's just lessons I learned along the way of how I found success and how I found good people to partner with. And I sort of chose my own path instead of falling into things. So it's about being a more creative marketer and standing out in the pack, if you will. So I guess it's a little bit about personal branding, but that's I've rewritten it a couple of times because it turned out first time around it was a big rant about how much I hated the music business.
Okay.
And then it turned into this. Here's a journey and uplifting story. But it's just like lots of lessons of how to find a way to differentiate yourself, and that would probably be coming out this summer sometime. And then I have a small book on creativity that I've been putting together for the past couple of years based on all my keynotes and sessions I've been doing around Europe. And that will probably just put that out as a Kindle single or something for free. But
oh, really?
That's what I've been working on.
Well, I know this guy with a podcast where he interviews authors of new marketing books. And I think I could get you in with him.
That would be appreciated. Anytime, anywhere, you name it. I'm a fan. I'm always here for you, Doug.
Well, I appreciate it, particularly the one on the personal branding thing, because the Live and Amplified, that sounds very interesting. And it brings to mind a few other books that have, you know, touched on a couple things that you mentioned there. I'd have to read it to see, but they're enormously popular with listeners. And just one of the things that got me thinking about doing this daily series was right after mid-March, maybe about 2 months ago. When I stopped shaving, actually. And I was hearing from a lot of listeners who were saying, Douglas, oh man, I've been listening to your show for a couple of years now, and I just got laid off. And, you know, a lot of people say, do you know of a book for this or that or whatever topic? And I'm always excited when I'm able to suggest something or a resource or whatever. And this one content marketer in the U.S. She said, I just got laid off. I did not see it coming. I guess I kind of need to reinvent myself. I said, why don't you, here's a link to one interview called, about a book called Stand Out by Dory Clark.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, like the right prescription. And I think, so on the show, out of all these hundreds of books, I've had Road to Recognition and also Known by Mark Schaefer.
Mark Schaefer, yeah. So, one of my favorite people on this planet, Mark Schaefer. That book is absolutely brilliant.
Me too. And so it sounds like your book is still going to be different, but it might have touch on some of those elements. So it sounds like a very refreshing approach. And also live and amplified, it's consistent with that Welcome to the Funnel, Jason Miller music brand. Hey, wait a minute. I'm on to you now.
It's an unconventional approach to personal branding, meaning it's like it's sort of the punk, the anti-establishment way of fighting against all things corporate branding and doing what's right for the business, even though it might not feel right and it makes people a little bit uncomfortable. That's how I've always been successful. But there's a couple books that one book that really got me going was James Altucher's book, I think it's called Reinvention. And man, it's just a collection of stories about people who've reinvented themselves. And he is just so inspiring. He's just a brilliant guy and hell of a great story behind him. But that book was great. Mm. And Mean People Suck, Michael Brenner's book, man. I have that upstairs. I read it over the holiday. He did a great job with that. I love Michael too. I've known him for many years, and such a great guy, such a brilliant marketer. But Mean People Suck, I love the book. I haven't told him that enough, so I will have to make sure I
well, that was episode – he was on for episode 250. And wow. I'm going to be talking to Michael Brenner in about 2 hours over cocktails. I'm gonna pass on your best wishes and good vibes to him. And he'll blush, of course, and be embarrassed. But that's the kind of guy he is. And one, it's not about him, but that's great. Well, listen, Jason, I really appreciate the opportunity to get you here on Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails. And then I remembered what a Seinfeld fan you were, and I realized, Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails, Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, that's what pulled you in. Yeah, it worked.
I thought that was what it was modeled after. Is that
it? Is accurate? Oh no, absolutely. I ripped it off completely with full attribution and apologies to Mr. Seinfeld. And is it as funny? No, but
Steal Like an Artist, like the great book from Austin Kleon, Steal Like an Artist, one of my favorites.
Right. Well, then, and as I when I first got the idea to do this, and did it in a hurry, I sent an email out to everybody. And of course, I sent an email to you at LinkedIn, and I didn't realize you had already left there, or Microsoft. And so you didn't get the email, but then I was able to connect with you. And I sent an email out to everybody and said, hey, I'm thinking about doing this thing. What do you think? And would you be interested in being on it? And within an hour, I heard from over 100 authors who said, I'm in.
Wow.
And a bunch of them said, Doug, I'm already drinking anyway, and I'm not doing anything. And I joke, but I love my authors. And the thing that was motivating them is they wanted to help. They wanted to help somebody somewhere if they possibly could. So just like
that
you're doing
awesome.
Here.
what a great community, and I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find a more generous group than authors. So, Jason, I hope you and the family continue to stay safe and healthy and sane, and I appreciate you coming on to Authors in Quarantine Getting Cocktails.
My pleasure, Douglas. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, as always.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.